It's Thursday. I'm Gab. He's Jules of the future. Now, Jules will look a little bit like you one day, I suspect. Yeah. If he's lucky, if he's fortunate. No, this is it's Stuart Robson, of course. Welcome aboard. We've got a packed show once again. We'll be talking Champions League. We'll be talking Conte, very unhappy. We'll be talking Cristiano Ronaldo, king of the Camp Nou. But where are we going to start? United and Leipzig, obviously. A huge story into to dissect this. We've got Mark Ogden joining us. Augie, I'm going to start right at the top with the fact that after the game, Solskjaer said, effectively, that he was taking responsibility and it was on him that United are going out. Did he get the approach to this game wrong in playing that back three? Mm-hmm. In playing a very evident counter-attacking formation?
Well, considering they needed a draw, I suppose you could say a counter-attacking approach was the right approach to do it, but I think the personnel was wrong. You know, Luke Shaw hasn't kicked a ball for 4 to 6 weeks, not fit. It didn't look like it. Was it a three? Was it a five? Harry Maguire, after the game, couldn't even tell you. He was actually said three or a five. He didn't even know himself. So this suggests there's a lot of confusion there.
It was, Augie, it was, I'm going to jump in here. Sorry, because I'm sorry. People always say that I cut you off. But you can't just say the personnel is wrong and say Shaw was poor. You got to tell me who we should have played in place of Luke Shaw.
Well, it should have played. I'd have gone with the back four and played Teller. The system that has worked recently in the Premier League, I'd have gone for that. I think if you haven't got the personnel to play it, if your personnel aren't fully fit, then you can't take those risks. You know, they ended up playing with three left-backs on Tuesday night. Three left-backs played. They had two defenders coming off the bench who hadn't appeared for ages. You know, Fosu Mensah came off the bench, hadn't appeared since September. So it just smacks of just being thrown together and with your fingers crossed and wishful thinking that you're going to get through. It didn't come across to me as a well-orchestrated plan to get a result. It just looked like, let's throw a few players together and hope we get a result.
I have to say, that was grotesque at the end. Brandon Williams, Twanzebe, and Fosu Mensah all on the pitch at the same time. I certainly would have never expected this. Robbo, I'm sure you can find further fault, but you also want to praise Leipzig and Nagelsmann a little bit?
Yeah, because they played at a pace that Manchester United at times couldn't cope with. They got players coming from different positions. They saw that there was a real weakness in the back three, back five, whatever you want to call it.
No centre forward.
No centre forward. So there was a lot of Manchester United players doing nothing, and they didn't organise themselves.
Arguably missing their best player as well, Nuno Upamecano.
But going back to the point with the back three, managers I keep hearing, head coaches keep saying, we've got no time to work with the players. We're going from one game to the next game to the next game. If that's the case, you can't keep changing your system and then suddenly putting people in. And as Augie said, throw a team together, because you are just hoping for the best if you do that. And that's what's happened to Manchester United too many times this season. They're hoping for the best. Then he sorts it out at half-time and changes the system. They play slightly better. But he hasn't prepared his team well enough week in, week out, because there's not enough time to do that. So you have to stick with the same personnel as much as you can and the same system.
Augie, the other kind of elephant in the room here, the other story that dominated this was in the build-up when Mino Raiola, Paul Pogba's agent, came out and he said at this time he's not going to extend his contract with United, and so he's got 18 months left. He's not happy at United because he hasn't performed the level he expects and others expect. United can either lose him on a free, or it's probably in the interest if they sell him in the next couple windows. All makes sense to me. I want to establish something first, right? Has he been offered a new contract by Manchester United at all?
Not officially. I'm sure that talks have taken place that, you know, raising the possibility, because United won't want to lose what they consider to be an asset. I think Pogba is a good player. With the right coach, he'd be a very good asset to the team, but I don't think Solskjaer knows what to do with him. I think it's also important to stress that United didn't lose this game because of what happened the day before with Mino Raiola. I don't think that distracted United whatsoever. I don't think Pogba would have played. I don't think he would have started anyway. So he's not started many games recently. I just think it's an easy excuse to point the finger at Pogba. And to be fair, I don't think anyone at United has.
No.
But let's be honest, it's not really worked for United and Pogba for a good while now. No manager seems to be able to get the best out of him. He doesn't look motivated. He had a great goal at West End of the day, but other days he'll you know, commit a stupid foul to give away a penalty in the last 10 minutes of a game. He can't be trusted to perform consistently. So
I think what you said is the way I think most people would photograph the situation. It's what Mino Raiola said, right? It's what he said. He's not performing to the level he wants to be at. So if everybody's in agreement that he's not going to sign a new contract, it's not even clear that United have offered him one, and that the best thing for United, if they want to get some money back, is to move him on, why is everybody getting so bent out of shape about what Raiola said? Is it because we're not used to hearing agents speak plainly?
Well, we're used to hearing Mauro Raiola speak plainly.
Well, yeah, that's
true. Raiola's just doing his job. And, you know, personally, I don't really have an issue with it. I just think it's when you buy a player that has Mino Raiola as an agent, that is the price of the ticket. That's what you come to expect, you know. Especially with Pogba. We saw it over the years with Balotelli. We see it with Pogba. I'm sure we might see it in the future with Erling Haaland as well, wherever he ends up. But, look, it's just the way that football operates.
But what I'm driving at, though, is this a bad thing for United, that Raiola, or does it actually not matter? Because what he's saying is exactly what Ed Woodward would have said if Ed Woodward had been asked the question and he decided to answer
it. I think it's a good thing if it forces the issue and it gets some resolution to it. Now, I don't think United will find a buyer in January. I think that's going to be very difficult for anyone to buy a Pogba in January. And I think he would have gone this summer, but for the pandemic, I think... You know, prior to the lockdown, it was obvious that Pogba's days were numbered at United. He wasn't playing. It was leading to him going to Madrid or Juventus or PSG. And the pandemic changed everything. And the problem that United have got isn't that they want to keep Pogba. The problem is that there isn't really an obvious buyer because nobody's got any money.
Yeah, I think if this deal gets done, given the situation around Europe, given the uncertainty, the clubs that he would want to go to and that could afford to pay him are going to try to do a players plus cash deal or maybe even a players deal. And those are difficult, and those are extremely messy, and it's not clear that it's what United necessarily want. So it's going to be hard. But I think all parties involved want to get this done.
I think if he goes somewhere else, he'll still be a world class player.
Podcast listeners, you're still with us. We've said goodbye to the TV folk. We're gonna drill deeper and more forensically into Pogba in a minute. But I do want to go back to the game, and like, I don't want to go and. Solskjaer doesn't need me to stick up for him, but there is a school of thought that says, look, it's a lot harder when the opposition scores straight away, which they did, and United showed a fight back at the end. Pogba, by the way, I thought played well and was a big part of that fight back. It was almost that own goal in the final minute, and if that goes in, then it's a draw, and then, you know, they're potentially still alive. You put these things together, and... You know, there is a basis there. I mean, this team on the pitch didn't give up for him. We all agree on that, right?
Yeah.
It's just a question of, are these players not good and are they not well coached? And I go back to this and I look at the first two goals. I mean, it's like Angelino makes himself invisible. I mean, Aaron Wan-Bissaka, he's not playing right back. He's playing right wing back, right? Yeah. When you play right wing back, correct me if I'm wrong, Robbo. Yeah. I know wing backs didn't exist in your era, but
well, they did at some point. They played with a sweeper at some point in my era.
And the sweeper was you, wasn't it?
It was at England youth level.
But what I'm saying is, he's got one guy outside him. That guy is Angelino, right? Yeah. He's how do you lose?
Well,
him?
let me tell
and
you
how did they lose Haidara on the second one, which I thought in some ways was even worse.
I'll tell you exactly why. Because the three centre backs did not see danger, did not take the right positions, and Wan-Bissaka at times had to come in field because there was midfield runners going in, and Lindelof was when the cross was coming from the other side, at times Lindelof was going out almost as a second fullback and being totally bypassed. The same Luke Shaw went into midfield and didn't see the danger. Harry Maguire's now moved across one too far. That comes down with
so Wan-Bissaka was reacting to mistakes the central
elsewhere.
Defenders
yes,
made.
Absolutely. And it happened time and time again. I was watching the
Whose
goals.
Job
and the
is it Maguire? Is it the goalkeeper's job
It's this each centre half and every player on the field. You know, you're talking about a back three or a back five, it's every one of those players has to be organising, pass on runners, make sure they see danger, talking all the time. There was no communication. I looked at the communication. It's not talking, come on, then let's get stuck in all this sort of stuff. It's about passing people on. You take him, I'll take this place. You know, whatever it may be, there has to be communication. But it has to be done on the training field. And what I see from Manchester United at the moment, that not enough work is done on the training field. And that's why they're ill-prepared for the start of games. He said it again, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, for the West Ham. Oh, we passed it into midfield. We played too slowly. We played round the back. It's his job to say, for the first 20 minutes, I want you to stick it in behind the opposition. I want us to play fast football, if that's what he wants. That's what he did in the second half. And the same in the game against Leipzig.
Augie, Robbo sharing the blame around rather than just blaming Wan-Bissaka, who, I mean, mistakes for the goal aside, wasn't good. I thought he had a really poor
game. Well, he didn't have
game.
A good game, no.
No. What's your take?
Well, I think there's a collective lack of quality and leadership in the back, 4, 5, 3, whichever one it is, whichever game it is, and the goalkeeper as well is an issue. But I think Wan-Bissaka, I think as a one-to-one defender, I think he's very capable. But when it comes to, you know, watching the back post, watching the guy that's coming on the left-hand side, and just thinking about, you know, thinking two steps ahead, I don't think Wan-Bissaka is up to it. I think, you know, I think what United signed was a very good one-on-one defender, and I don't think he's progressed from that.
What I would say, Oggy, the problem with Wan-Bissaka is, like many players that have got great pace, is that they don't learn the game when they're younger because their pace gets them out of trouble. And that's what happens with him when he's in a 1v1 situation. His pace gets him out of trouble when he thinks, I'm a good 1v1 defender. You try and take me on, I'll beat you. But when it comes to decision-making, it has nothing to do with pace now. You've got to read the game, and he doesn't read the game.
Okay, so you have to learn, and you need to be instructed, and you need to grow, and you do that on the training pitch, and Solskjaer has no time to train his players like most managers, which is why you're kind of stuck in this situation.
So then you can't keep changing the system. You have to stick to a system.
But it's more about the quality of the coach. I don't know. I don't look at the coach at Man United. I look at Solskjaer and his coaches. I don't think there's the quality or experience there to get a back four or a back five or a back three working. You know, Solskjaer doesn't strike me as a coach. Kieran McKenna, Michael Carrick, both very young coaches, not the experience that they haven't got a track record of coaching teams. Mick Phelan, I don't quite know what Mick Phelan does, you know. But I think beyond the defenders, I think there's a big issue with the goalkeeper. I think, and the communication-wise, I think De Gea has given a lot of nervousness to the back four. Now, if you look at recent results, when he's been in the goal, they've let a lot of goals in. When he's not been in the goal, they've not let a lot of goals in. And that's because Dean Henderson has come in. He's more confident as a goalkeeper. He's a much better communicator. He will happily, you know, organise his defenders, shout orders, instructions when he needs to. And I think, you know, De Gea, Southampton, De Gea, 2-0 down at half-time because of injury. Second half, they win 3-2. PSG comes back in strangely 2 or 3 days later, having been injured. They let in 3 goals. West Ham away, he's not playing. They concede 1 goal, but win 3-1. Last night he plays, and he conceded 3 goals. And the third goal, you know, I've never seen a supposed world-class goalkeeper turn his back on that like he did last night. It was terrible. But he does that a lot. De Gea is not a very courageous goalkeeper. He's great for the cameras at times, pulls off great shot stopping, but coming for crosses, not very good. Organising defence, not very good. It doesn't say much at times. And I think you can see the look on the defender's face at times with De Gea. It's almost like, come on, help us out. Get out of your 6-yard box. So I think Solskjaer now has to make a big call and say to De Gea, I've given you so many chances, you keep letting me down. It's time for Dean Henderson to have an extended run of the team.
This is an age-old issue, I think. And, you know, whenever people talk about enormous long-term contracts for players, this is always what you run into. It's not just United. It's Mesut Ozil, obviously. It's Alexis Sanchez at United. It's the De Gea situation. I don't know how you navigate out of it because obviously, especially with a goalkeeper, because if you sit him, you destroy his value if nobody ever sees him.
For 3 or 4 seasons, David De Gea was a magnificent goalkeeper for Manchester United. But once a goalkeeper starts making mistakes, it's very difficult for them to turn it back round because every time they make the next mistake, you refer back to the previous mistake. So that's the problem they have.
All right, let's look forward a little bit and go back to Paul Pogba here. I'm just going to quickly recap because Raiola said, if people want to blame me, I want to be the bad guy, then so be it. In actual fact, as we said, though, Mark, this doesn't change anything from United's perspective. And I've got a piece going up where I say United's job, effectively, like any club, is to figure out whether they want to extend his deal or not, and if so, on what terms. And if they don't, where can they go and move him? Now, Augie, you said that they were hoping to move him in the summer, and then the pandemic happened, and that's why they didn't extend his deal earlier. Hindsight's 2020. Obviously, they should have extended his deal earlier. But what I want to go back to is, after his third season at Manchester United, the season in which he scored 13 goals, he played in 35 games, he was fit the whole season. I believe that was the season that Solskjaer replaced Mourinho, correct? That was a time to extend his contract, right? If you were going to do it, and to help retain his value. And it didn't happen at that time. Do you have any insight into why and how they left themselves in this situation? Were they just unlucky?
There's always been a... I think you're right, that would have been the time from United's point of view to extend, but I don't think it was a time from the player's point of view or the agent's point of view that he had quite a long time left of his contract, pretty much 3 years with the extension with United trigger. So it would have... If you're Paul Pogba at the time thinking, where's this team going? Why would I want to commit to a long-term contract at a team that, you know, is not in the Champions League and it's not competing for trophies? So I don't think that Pogba would have gone anywhere near signing a contract. I don't think he ever will at United, but I think they just don't fit together, do they? I think, you know, look at what happened to Liverpool. When Felipe Coutinho wanted to leave, a lot of the fans thought that'd be the worst thing in the world. If Coutinho leaves, it's a sign that the club isn't going anywhere. But they sold him, and Liverpool were smart. They reinvested it fantastically on Virgil van Dijk and Alisson Becker. Now, United won't get anything like Coutinho money for Pogba, but if they are smart, they can get him out of the club and find players that could do a better job for the team. That is the problem, because A, how much money do you get from him? B, do you trust the people at United, the recruitment people, to buy the right players? Right. And you probably say no on both counts.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules. There's another elephant in the room here, which is United are out of the Champions League. If they don't finish top four this season and they don't look like they're making forward progress, is there a moment, and let's say they don't manage to shift Pogba in January, which I think we all agree is going to be difficult, is that a moment where maybe United start considering a new manager? And maybe the new manager, I don't know, let's call him Mauricio, for example, or whatever, whoever it is, right, says, oh, by the way, let me talk to Paul Pogba. Yep. Because he's going to be the centerpiece of that team. I can reach him, blah, blah, blah. I'm the Pogba whisperer. Is that a potential scenario, do you think?
I don't think so. I think so much has happened now with Pogba. Like I say, if Pogba is an elite player, he sees himself as an elite player, a World Cup winner, a guy that wants to win the Champions League, why stay at Man United? It's in the Europa League. What? He'll have given United 5 years of his career. By that point, I just think that if he wants to win things and be in the big games, he's got to move on. I just think United, at the moment, aren't a team that's going to be competing for the big trophies for at least 2 or 3 years, probably longer. So I just don't see why Pogba would
stay. At least two or three years before United can compete for anything? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. Because, well, yes. Well, I don't see any... Solskjaer's made progress in some aspects, but in other aspects, they're exactly where they were 2 years under Mourinho. So I don't see United competing. I don't see Liverpool or Man City falling away anytime soon. In terms of Europe, it's the same thing. You know, Bayern Munich, United are in the same league. And the reason why I say that is because behind the scenes, they don't have a credible structure or strategy in place to get to where they want to be. It could be even longer than 2 or 3 years. I just don't see any sign of hope. Because as well, Gab, you know, we're talking about Pogba, that why would he stay? If they keep missing out in the Champions League, people are asking questions about Marcus Rashford, Mason Greenwood. These players aren't going to want to stay. They're in the same place that Liverpool were maybe for 10 years, where Liverpool's best players would give it 2 or 3 years and say, look, we're not going anywhere. You know, Coutinho, Luis Suarez, Michael Owen going back a few years, Fernando Torres. Maybe Man United are approaching that same stage where their best players are looking around thinking, this club isn't going anywhere. They're not going to win the big trophy, so I need to move somewhere that will.
Robbo, can you put some positive spin on all his negativity about United? It's difficult.
It is difficult too, because when Oggy's talking about some of the players that might move on, I'm still not sure that Rashford is ever going to be a world-class player. I still don't think he reads the game particularly well. That's why Manchester United aren't progressing, because some of these players that they think are top-quality players aren't top-quality players at the moment.
All right, but I will say this, though, about Rashford, okay? Apart from somebody named Killian Give me a striker in the last 10 years who you looked at him at 22 and said, oh, he reads the game so well.
Yeah.
I think we need to put this in. You know, we don't want to overhype the youngsters. But you've got to show
signs of improvement in your reading of the game. And at the moment, and again, that could come down to the coaching. Manchester United, from what I've seen over the last couple of years, or particularly last year, they need a new coach. If they're going to develop the individual players, they need a new coach. If they're going to develop the team...
You say new coach, are you talking about replacing Solskjaer?
Replacing Solskjaer, yeah. Manager, head coach, whatever you
want
to call
it. I just want to be clear on this.
Right. But they've got to replace him because he's not developing... He might be a nice... bloke to the players, and he might put an arm around them. They need developing and they need coaching, and that needs to be the thing that
Do you agree with that, Augie? That they should replace Solskjaer between now and the end of the season?
I think, yes.
And if that's the case, then why not ask, if you're going to replace him and you identify a successor, you would certainly ask him, is Pogba part of your plan?
I just want to qualify that. Yes, I do think United should replace Solskjaer as a manager, as a coach, but, you know, if they're not going to do that, I think there is a kind of a halfway house where he needs to do what Sir Alex Ferguson did, find a Carlos Queiroz or a Steve McClaren or a Rennie Mullenstein, a proper top quality coach who will do the work on the training ground that Solskjaer can't do. Now, I'm not saying that Solskjaer has the same status as Ferguson did, but they do lack something on the training pitch, experience and some top record.
That's a really good point, Mark. I think the big difference is that when Sir Alex Ferguson did that, he was already Sir Alex Ferguson. Mm. He'd already won European trophies with Aberdeen, his status. He was always going to be above the guy they bring in. If you were to bring in Carlos Queiroz now, the guy would, Solskjaer would potentially see him as a threat, right?
But he's had that bravery. The manager has to have that bravery, because if he doesn't do that, he's going to lose his job anyway. He's got to be brave and say, I want to bring somebody in.
But he's saying, effectively, I can't coach. I need somebody to hold my hand.
We had the same situation. We had the same situation with David Moyes. His coaching staff just was not at the level that Man United needed. You know, at least David Moyes was a Premier League manager of a certain length of time, but his coaching staff wasn't up to it. And now we're at the same position with Solskjaer's team, and that is where they're falling down. That there's no expertise. There's no best in class when you look at United coaching staff.
Right.
That is the problem. You know, you look at everyone at Liverpool, Man City, Tottenham, you can see players improving because the coaching staff and the coaches at United, you just think, no, they're not.
How awesome would it be if they brought in, who's I'm always blank on his name, Buvak, was it? Klopp's old number two, right? Falls out with him, leaves, disappears. How cool would it be if they unveil him? What?
Well, Liverpool started winning everything once he left.
Well, whatever, but it would be cool if he came back, right? And he said, on a mission to knock Jurgen Klopp off his perch.
Yeah.
There you go.
There we are.
All right, let's do some role play here. Not in that sense, but you mentioned Juventus, Real Madrid, Paris Saint Germain. Those are that's a speculative destinations for Pogba. There's not anybody else I'm forgetting. Anybody else would be a surprise, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. I think what all three have in common is they're all going to make big losses this year, in part because of the pandemic. I'm just going to give you my view on each, and you guys can correct me or jump in, and we can talk through different scenarios, right? Paris Saint-Germain would be great for Pogba because he gets to go back to Paris and whatever, and Neymar and Mbappe. Issue number one, total lack of money. Mm. They can maybe make it happen if they shift Mbappe or Neymar, and then you create some sort of chain reaction. I think that's the only way. In terms of a players plus cash exchange, I don't know that there are any Paris Saint-Germain players where United would look at it and say, well, this is a young, talented player. This fits what we need right now, except obviously for Kylian Mbappe. But obviously that's not going to happen. Because I think right now, correct me if I'm wrong, and please interrupt me, but United's approach now has to be either get very good young players who can grow with the team, or, because you just need to get results, get Cavani-type signings, right? One-year deal, no transfer fee, tons of money, but then you're not locked into him long-term, right? That has to be the approach. So that being the case, I think Paris Saint-Germain is actually going to be very, very difficult. Real Madrid, you've got Zidane. That's a plus, assuming Zidane keeps his job.
Yeah, he's got to keep his job, which was better after last night.
You've got Modric on an expiring contract.
Yep.
You've got Bale, who, you know, they're crossing their fingers that they can dump his contract. Mm. So you can generate a little bit of money to pay Pogba there. The issue becomes a fee. Would United, are there players at Old at Real Madrid that they'd be happy to part with that would make United better? Thinking, would a Vinicius or a Rodrigo do it? No, they don't
want
wingers.
No, I don't think so. No, no, no.
Isco, they don't need,
no.
right?
And he's got Valverde, right off the boat. Yep.
Valverde would be great for United, but they're not going to give him up, right?
No.
Do you see anybody around Madrid that? I mean,
no. I think you discount Real Madrid for those reasons. They haven't got the money, and there's nobody they can lay off because they're all players in the early to mid 30s. I just don't think there's a feasible option at Real Madrid.
Because Manchester United had their fingers burnt once before when they got Schweinsteiger, didn't they? An old player that was going to come in, and it didn't work for them, and he was on massive money.
I wonder. I mean, there are, you know, Real Madrid could buy back. It's funny, with hindsight, if they hadn't given up Achraf Hakimi, for example, that is somebody who United could probably use, right? United don't really need a Reguilon who they could buy back and then ship, and then Real Madrid could buy him back and then dump him in part exchange.
I presume you're dismissing every other Premier League club from Pogba going to.
Wow, I hadn't considered that possibility. Is there another Premier League club that could you see Pogba at Man City? Obviously, well, would be that'd be a story. But
the three clubs, that, I mean, would Chelsea eventually have the money to buy Paul Pogba?
I think Chelsea have spent all their money, and I think they have it. Yeah. I think if there's one position where Chelsea got a lot of bodies, it's that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we can rule out Chelsea.
Listen,
we can rule out Spurs for obvious reasons.
Yeah. Rule out Liverpool. An incredible option.
Sorry, Augie?
No, there's no credible option in the Premier League. I think it does boil down to Juventus or PSG for the reasons we've discussed. And
okay.
Gab, I know you're leading towards player swap,
from Juventus's perspective, they have a bunch of older guys on big salaries who they'd love to shift, or a guy like Dybala, who he's coming up for contract renewal. He's been terrible in the last couple of months. He was really good 6 months ago. Mm-hmm. United wanted him before. I know United have made some stupid moves in the past, but there's no way United would sign Dybala now, right? So they wouldn't take Dybala in part exchange for Pogba.
You'd think not, and you'd hope not, because if Dybala said no on one occasion for the reasons that he didn't want to go to Manchester, it'd be absolutely crazy to even contemplate going down that route. So one player they do like, and they have liked, is Matthijs de Ligt, but problem with De Ligt is his agent is Mino Raiola, so I don't see that actually happening.
Why would that be a problem, though? Hang on a second. If anything, if you're Mino Raiola,
that'd be a good
thing. Think about it. Since you get paid from every side, right?
Yep.
A De Ligt for Pogba swap is a win for Mino. It's not for you, though, so it's not going to happen.
But it means you still have, from a Man United point of view, you still have Mino Raiola's influence, malign or otherwise, in the club. You know, he's there, and you know, if De Ligt has a great 2 years, then what happens in 2 years? What's a massive contract?
Augie, can I just say something? I know people talk about the malign influence of Mino Raiola. You know, I look, maybe I give Ed Woodward too much credit, but he's a man of the world, right? He can't pretend that Mino Raiola doesn't exist and on principle never deal with him. Otherwise, he would have never gone for Haaland. Otherwise, if we say that, then there's no chance of Erling Haaland ever coming to Manchester United, right? What are you going to do?
There is at the moment. I mean, why would Erling Haaland?
Well, because the team is bad.
But, by going to Man United.
But if they show signs of progress or whatever, it could happen. I mean, I don't know. I don't agree with you in such a way. But
then, yeah.
I think you have a Juve player where this swap might work.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo is the guy that it seems that Juventus would potentially move him on. I think financially it would help them. They want Pogba, they'd like Pogba. Pogba to Juventus, Ronaldo to United. It's, you know, the age of Ronaldo doesn't help. He's 35 in February, so age isn't on his side. But United, you know, look at Zlatan. Zlatan's, is he 40 yet? Pushing 40?
Getting up there.
I think Ronaldo's in the same bracket as Zlatan in terms of how he looks after himself. I think if United are going to lose, and let's be honest, they're not just losing a player in Pogba, they're losing a very big commercial element, a guy that's on all the posters all over the world in their kit. I think Ronaldo replaces that. I'm not saying it's something that makes sense, but it does make sense in this equation, in the sense that if United are looking at getting Pogba off the books and a player that would come in, you know, as the trade-off, then I think Ronaldo works. I think he'd score goals in the Premier League. I think he'd It's not great for a club of Man United started to be bringing back players at the age of 35 that they've had before. It does feel a little bit short term, but it is a solution I think would work for all parties. And I think,
you know,
I don't think the United fans have been unhappy with it.
That's not mad. I mean, Cristiano Ronaldo's got 1 year left at Juventus, right? After this season. So Juventus are going to have a big decision to make. Do you extend him? He's still scoring goals, as
he's scoring goals, but he's doing less and less in games than he ever did.
Whatever, I know. But you've probably been saying that for the last 10 years that he's doing less and less in games, and then meanwhile he scores 25 goals a season, if not when he's not scoring 50.
So, but he's at the top team in Serie A. He wouldn't be going to the top team in the Premier League.
That's fine. But from Juventus's perspective, and I know Juve fans are going to get angry when I say this, the guy makes so much money. The commercial bump that they got from signing him, they've already got that. If you're not going to extend into a deal rather than lose him for nothing, hey, look, let me get Pogba in return. I think you could sell it on that end. From United's perspective, Cavani signed a one-year deal, right? He's doing fine or whatever, but Cavani's not getting any younger. I think most people, except maybe for Edinson Cavani's mum, would agree that Cristiano Ronaldo is a better footballer than Edinson Cavani and scores more goals. So Cavani leaves, Pogba leaves, and then slot Cristiano into the Cavani role. The only problem with that, Cristiano wants to play every single game so he can keep scoring goals, right? That is possibly the only problem there?
I think as well, we have to realise how Man United think as well, certainly how Ed Woodward and the Glazers think, and a lot of it is about off-field impacts and commercial, what have you. Next summer, we could have the prospect of Lionel Messi going to Manchester City, and United will need something to match that kind of publicity grab. So, about for the final years of their career, we've got Ronaldo and Messi in Manchester, and, you know, it suits everybody.
Okay, I want this clipped from Mark Ogden, because he will be the Nostradamus of football if this happens.
Messi to Man City,
Ronaldo Cristiano to Manchester United, you know, and then let's time travel back 10 years.
It was a similar process 4 years ago when City appointed Pep Guardiola. Man United needed to do something, so they brought Jose Mourinho to Manchester. It was Pep versus Jose. So let's see, summer 2021, Messi at Man City, Ronaldo at Man United, and we have the twilight years of their magnificent careers in the reign of Manchester. How about that?
Only thing that's missing is Jose Mourinho to walk out on Spurs, make a shock return to Old Trafford. Augie, thanks so much. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough United, enough Augie. So let's pick ourselves up here. Juventus played Barcelona at the Camp Nou. And Robbo, I figured, you know, when the draw came out, I said, great, you know, this is going to be one heck of a game because Messi against Cristiano Ronaldo, whatever. And then as it approached, I said, right, there's not much to talk about here. Like, we'll probably won't be doing this game because it's a dead rubber. Both teams have already qualified. Juventus could theoretically finish first, but, you know, realistically, they weren't going to win by 3 goals at the Camp Nou, except they did, and they end up topping the group, leaving Barcelona in this circle of hell where they're going to get a really, really top side in the draw when it comes out. What happened? Did Barcelona just misunderstand the rules, and did they think Juventus?
Well, I think they thought how you were thinking, that this was a dead rubber. And
I thought it was logical.
We could play at half pace and Juventus won't come and press us too high. It'd be a nice game and be a nice footballing game. It wasn't the case. Barcelona were too lethargic when they had the ball in possession at the back. Their midfield players couldn't dominate. Juventus pressed them high up the field. And when Juventus got the ball into particularly Morata, their counter-attacking at pace was excellent. It's the best I've seen Juventus play in the first half. McKennie was making forward runs. He was just running in between the two centre-halves. He scored the second goal. They were outstanding in the first. Best Juventus performance I've seen for quite some while. But Barcelona, the effort and the enthusiasm to close the ball down or make forward runs was really poor. And Messi was one of those players. Oh, yes, he got seven or eight shots and he was the one player that was going to spark them. But for the first 30 minutes, he went at a walking pace. He was playing, I'm not even sure where he was trying to play. There was no closing down from Griezmann as well. So the two front players were non-existent when Juventus had the ball. The three centre-halves of Juventus had as much time on the ball to pick out their passes. They could switch the play. It was a very good performance by Juventus, but very, very poor from Barcelona.
A word on Weston McKennie. He scored a great goal. He's really been, I think, a driving force when he's played in midfield. Hasn't started every game.
No.
Were you surprised? Because he's a very, very bright player. We knew that. But were you surprised how quickly he settled and how important he's become? Because this is a, you know, an anonymous dude in the Schalke midfield in the eyes of many, right?
But I was more impressed with him in this game because I've seen him play for Juventus as one of the holding midfield players. You know, and you think, well, he's got all the attributes. Right. He's athletic. He's aggressive. He can see danger. But in this game, and I think it's happening in another Serie A game, he starts making forward runs. He was the player that was making forward. Ramsey was playing on the left-hand side and then coming infield. But it was Weston McKennie that kept on making runs and dynamic runs in between the two centre-halves of Barcelona, who were as far apart as you could possibly be. And he looked a real threat. So I'm surprised that he settled down so quick, but I was surprised in the way he got forward to great effect in this game.
He seems to have, you know, people talk about how long will it take Juventus to understand what Pirlo wants him to do and execute. Well, McKennie is one guy who seems to have gotten it straight away. You know, him and Morata. Other players evidently taking a lot longer to do that. Why can't Juventus play like this all the time?
Because they've been changing and chopping the personnel. Sometimes they end up with, because sometimes they've been playing with a back four, sometimes it's a back three. They were back three against Barcelona, which goes to a back four when they haven't got possession. But quite often in the wing back positions, they've had people like Chiesa or Kulusevski. Now, for all the quality they've got, I'm not sure you really want those in wing-back positions. You know, Kulusevski's much better when he's coming infield and joining in with the front players. And I would say Chiesa, when he's playing on the right-hand side and giving width, and it's narrower on the left-hand side, he's a good bet to go past people. So I think they've been played slightly out of position. And, of course, at times he's tried to fit Dybala into that team. And it hasn't worked because Dybala's playing way off the pace and he's playing too deep. If he can replicate what they did against Barcelona, both in the first half, in the attacking sense and the closing down, and in the second half defending well in and around their penalty area, Juventus will be best team in Serie A again.
Yeah, and maybe achieve something in Europe finally, which is why they changed their whole system. I mean, going back to Barcelona for a second, obviously major defensive issues as well as the front too. But if you're Koeman, like, how do you shake this team? I mean, he's tried everything, right? He's tried Braithwaite. Yeah. I'm wondering with Messi is, you know, this is a guy who's used to playing with, for his career, he played with Luis Suarez, he played with Neymar, he played with Eto'o, Ronaldinho. Now all of a sudden, does he look up and see Trincao and Braithwaite and the shadow of Griezmann and say, what the heck am I doing here?
Well, the problem is they had no shape to their attacking play. They had Trincao out on one side and
But forget the shape. I don't know, the individuals.
But this is the important thing. It's not just about the individual. The shape of the front line. They kept on getting into great positions. They had, I would probably say, 70% possession in the second half. They got it so far. The ball goes out wide. Not one player was making a run into the box. So they come back out and they go square again. So when it comes to Messi, there's nobody in front of him to play a pass. So he had, I think, eight shots from outside the box, but there was no one actually to thread balls. Only when Braithwaite came on and started to run in behind did they look any sort of threat behind Juventus.
Robert, let's take a closer look at these two teams, just because obviously you watch a ton of both, but you're coming in a ton of Juventus games this season. And look, I've been accused of giving Pirlo the benefit of the doubt, but there's no question. What he's trying to do is completely different from what Juventus have tried to do before.
Yep.
And that takes time. They have a number of new signings in areas. You highlighted Chiesa and Kulusevski before. But these are pretty important roles in those wide areas in the type of football that he wants to play. It's legitimate to suggest that he needs time, right?
Yeah, I think he does need time. I think you can see, I can now see what he's trying to do. There is a pattern to what he's doing, and it is a back four that turns to a back three as soon as they get possession, and the key player to it has been Danilo, because he's the third centre. He can play at full-back or the third centre-half.
Right.
Cuadrado is obviously key to it as well, because he's the right-sided player that will get forward. And if he plays with Cuadrado on the right-hand side, then the left-sided player becomes an out-and-out left-winger, which will be Chiesa maybe at times. It's been Bernardeschi partly this season. And then when it's the other way round, then it's Aaron Ramsey that comes in and plays very narrow, and he then makes forward runs. When he's in the side, they lose more shape, because he's a player that just wants to go here, there and everywhere. And then when they lose possession, they're unbalanced. So I can see exactly what formation he's trying to do. I can see what he's trying to do in terms of his philosophy.
It's pretty ambitious.
It's pretty ambitious. But I think it's beginning to take shape. He's starting to get the front two working together, because at the start, when Morata was almost playing as the centre forward and Ronaldo didn't really link up with him, now those two are linking up with each other and got a good understanding. The problem he's had is when Ronaldo's been ill or injured, where does Dybala fit into it all? Because Dybala, instead of playing up front, ends up playing too deep in
Dybala's
midfield.
Dybala's been very poor.
So then they lose that forward thrust. And that's been the case, I think, was against Benevento, when Dybala was really poor.
I mean, I think in some ways, when you know that, because of Ronaldo's age, because he's got 18 months on a contract that likely won't be renewed, I imagine, you're building a team, but then you got to also accommodate a superstar who maybe can't do everything you want him to do because of his age and because it's not... So you have to cater to the superstar's gifts while also trying to introduce an entirely new pattern of play.
Yeah.
My big concern, my big takeaway has long been this team plays too slow. And I read his thesis, and I know what to write down on paper isn't what happens in reality. But a lot of it is based on committing a lot of people forward and a lot of quick, sharp passing triangles and movements and whatever. Mm-hmm. I look in the middle of the park, and I see Archer just always passes the ball sideways. Bentancur's been really poor. McKennie's probably not that sort of player. Rabiot's not that sort of player. Mm-hmm. How big an issue is this?
I've seen an improvement in Rabiot in terms of he's the player that's shown a little bit of pace with the ball.
No, he does, but he's not creative.
He's not creative, but he's creative when he runs past people with the ball and starts then to look to be
scored. But do you need the creative, penetrative passer for the system to work?
I think you always need a penetrative passer from midfield. The problem I thought that Sarri had was that he didn't get the best out of Pjanic. He wanted Pjanic to pass it sideways like he had Jorginho doing. And I think that slows everything down. And Pirlo has gone for exactly the same sort of player in Arthur. I wouldn't have Arthur anywhere near the side at the moment.
I wouldn't suggest that Pirlo's gone for him as much as the accountants at the club have gone for him. Because Arthur's been sold, oh, look, he can do what Pjanic does, but on top of that, he runs around and he's younger and whatever. And no, he can't.
No.
I still think the most penetrative passer on that team
is Bonucci.
Yeah, I was going to say, or De Ligt. But, you know, again, they're going to have to grow.
And what he has done, going back to what Pirlo's trying to do, it's just started to become evident that he wants Bonucci to step forward into midfield a bit more.
Yeah.
So when the ball goes into wide areas, the midfield players push on and they leave space so that Bonucci can come out and get on the ball and then pick his passes out. Unfortunately, the movement up in the front areas, Morata wants to come more to feet, so Bonucci's long-distance passing hasn't quite been as effective.
But Ronaldo's not going to run behind.
Ronaldo's not going to run in behind too often.
On Barcelona, I mean, we've done them to death on their show. Obviously, it's a Messi-centric issue, right?
Mm-hmm.
Messi took seven shots in the game, and you can say, is that good? Is that bad? Is it Messi taking responsibility? He didn't do things off the ball. What I asked you earlier was, there's a lack of shape, a lack of system. But I think there is a lack
of players.
I think when you're as great as Messi, I mean, look, he's not stupid. He knows he's better than anybody he has ever played with, not just by a little bit, but by a lot. But I think that when he played with other players, he knew that they could do things individually in the game. I don't know that he feels that when he plays with the guys he is now. And it's not that Coutinho or Dembele, because look, it's not all Braithwaite and bad Griezmann. I just think he feels that he doesn't trust them to take responsibility. He takes it upon himself, which then means he exhausts himself, which means he doesn't contribute anything off the ball because he just starts walking around. So then again, they're defending with 10 when he's not there. he's not helped by the fact that in midfield, you know, I think Pjanic basically surprised me in some way with his passing. Mm-hmm. But other than De Jong, it's a shambles when De Jong's...
Yeah. I mean, I've been disappointed with Pjanic over the last couple of years. I've seen him play...
But this season in the Champions League, he's been okay.
But I've seen him play for...
He's hardly played in the league.
For Roma, for many, many, on many, many occasions, for his national team, where I would say he's one of the best passers in world football. He was hitting big passes out from one side of the field to the other. He was picking out passes that no one else would see. Yet for some reason, over the last couple of years, he hasn't played those passes. Whether that's the instructions of the manager, I want short passing football.
Yeah, his last couple of years is Juve. So
yeah. And then this season, in the game against Juventus, playing for Barcelona, he went back to passing it short and square. And De Jong's not at the moment the player I saw at Ajax, who seemed to have a change of pace to go past someone, so then he could pick his pass out. He's again playing square and backwards and not really picking anybody out.
I think De Jong feels that he has to do everything in midfield. I think he has to provide that defensive cover, whether he plays with Busquets or whether he plays with Pjanic. He's been moved to center back, obviously, in certain situations. I look forward and I ask myself, how are Barcelona getting out of this? And Barcelona are going to have to spend money on another defender. Like, that has to be the, you know, because you can't play the best of the season with Mingueza, Lenglet, and Ronald Araujo. To do that, they're going to have to sell somebody to raise some cash. I'm assuming it's going to be Ricky Puig, if somebody will take him, maybe Trincao, maybe somebody like that. But, and that means that if you have to repair that situation, you can't fix things elsewhere. Like, this is your crew the rest of the year.
Yeah.
That is the really scary thing going forward.
Barcelona, from now to the end of the season, are going to have some excellent nights when it all works out for them. They look as though they can pass the opposition to death. They can pick out their forward runs, an individual bit of brilliance from Messi. They're going to win games. But there's going to be nights where they're going to play really poorly, be not creative at all, not create chances, and be hopelessly defensive.
Right, enough of all that. How about some quick hits?
Always like a quick hit.
I bet you do. Real Madrid beat Borussia Mönchengladbach 2-0 as Karim Benzema bangs in 2 goals and Sergio Ramos returns at the back. Robbo, all is well again. And if he beats Atletico Madrid this weekend, the crisis at Real Madrid will be well and truly over. Yes?
I'd like to think so, because it was a good, really good performance a couple of nights ago. I thought they played really well, dominated the game, crosses coming into the box at will, Benzema winning balls in the air. But it was also a good performance when I did them against Inter. They tactically got absolutely right, stop balls being played into Lukaku, and I thought it was an excellent performance. And if they win against Atletico Madrid, maybe they're starting to sort things out.
Gladbach were terrible, though.
Yes. Madrid's win meant that Inter needed to beat Shakhtar to qualify. They only got a 0-0 draw, and Conte wasn't happy.
Yeah, we saw sort of bad Conte afterwards. Like, during the game, like they created a lot of chances. They were unlucky with some. If they'd scored, it would have been a tragedy. He made some curious choices, like he waited until 15 minutes from time to bring in Alexis Sanchez and 8 minutes of time to bring in Christian Eriksen. Mm-hmm. He complained the fact that Shakhtar were too defensive and just playing on the counter. He said, they changed the way they played against us, and, you know, as if that's not a manager to do. He got into it on television with, of all people, Fabio Capello. Fabio Capello said, oh, it looks to me like you don't have a plan B. And he was like, oh, well, I do have a plan B. I'm just not going to tell you what it is, because otherwise people are going to find out. I mean, it was silly. It's a very disappointing night.
And just
for
when it looks like he turned the corner a little bit in Serie A.
Who knows? Look, they're even out of the Europa League. This might help him, gives him more time to work. Maybe they'll win Serie A. I think that's how he redeems the season. Atletico Madrid got the result they needed against Salzburg, but Robbo, this wasn't exactly Atletico 2.0, that attacking, free spirit Atletico we've seen this season. In fact, it was quite the opposite. And will you miss Jesse Marsh's crew?
I certainly will, because I thought they played some excellent football. They played at pace. I mean, he's been, you know, when I saw his teams in MLS, I was never that inspired. But this Salzburg team play excellent football. They play at a tempo that really Atletico Madrid didn't like. So I will be disappointed that they aren't going through.
Sabasly, huh? That's got you excited.
Yeah. UEFA have opened an investigation into events between Paris Saint-Germain and Istanbul Başak Şehir over comments made by the fourth official during the match. What's your thoughts on that?
So I think, like, we need to establish all the facts here.
Of course.
What I think is pretty obvious is he referred to Pierre Webbo, who is the who was an assistant at Istanbul, who's Cameroonian. he referred to, he wanted the referee to send him off or to talk to him or to book him or whatever, and he referred to him as, you know, the black guy on the bench, which is not an acceptable, it's not an appropriate way to talk about people in any way, shape, or form. What is encouraging is the fact that both teams, you know, we saw both teams come together to stop a match. And that's something that people have been calling out, calling for in the past. And we've been calling out for a long time. It's ironic that now it was because of something a referee did rather than a player or opposing fans. So I think in some ways there's been a bit of a sea change there. In terms of whether this was an innocent comment or a racist comment, or you know, he had racist intent, I don't care. It's not an appropriate way to speak. And he's an experienced referee. He's 43 years old. He refereed his first international game way back in 2006. This is not some country bumpkin, right? So he said the word, you know, I should point out, he said the word obviously in his own language in Romanian. But, you know, Romanian is very close to Spanish. Pierre Webbo speaks Spanish, having played for years. So this is just not an appropriate way. It's not a good look. Let's wait for the full investigation. There's other suggestions of things that might have been going on. But I don't think this guy's going to be, I don't think we're going to see him again in a UEFA competition. On the pitch, of course, they replayed the rest of the game on Wednesday after it was abandoned, and PSG won 5-1 with Neymar getting a hat-trick and Mbappe scoring twice. Robbo, Jules keep telling me Tuchel will go at the end of the season, and he's all doom and gloom. But might they actually be better than last season in the Champions League?
They were certainly better in these qualifying rounds than they were in the...
Could they win it is what I'm driving at.
No, I don't think they can. I don't think they're consistent enough. I don't think they're good enough defensively. And they need Mbappe, Neymar and anybody else and Di Maria to be at their very best. And I don't think they'll be at their very best every week.
Who needs Di Maria when you've got Moise Kean?
Atalanta also advanced, beating Ajax 1-0. Gab, this wasn't the thrilling Atalanta that we're used to.
No, they went all defensive in this game, which, you know, needing a draw, and which nobody was, or I think few people were expecting. I mean, the whole backstory to this, of course, big falling out between Gasperini and two of his players, Ilicic and Papu Gomez.
Two
important players, certainly before, anyway. It got to the point that Gasperini actually... reportedly resigned, and then the club says, no, we don't accept your resignation, get us through to the knockout rounds, then we'll see where we are. They're through the knockout rounds. I think there's still a strong possibility that Gasperini might not be there to play those knockout rounds because he took it very, very badly. Lazio were hoping to overtake Borussia Dortmund, and at one point it looked like they could. Instead, they had to hang on at the very end to beat Bruges. Robbo, is it just mental weakness?
I think it is, because they were dominating the game. Bruges were down to 10 men. They should have dominated even more, but I think it was a lack of mental toughness. They worried about Bruges getting that equaliser and then going on and winning the game. So, yes, I think it was a mental problem for Lazio. Speaking of Dortmund, they came from behind to beat Zenit 2-1, Gab. Erling Haaland will be back for the knockout stages. They obviously have a bunch of talented kids. Are we underrating them at the moment?
I don't think we are, because I don't think that this is a coherent team. Yeah, there's a ton of talent. So the question is, can they come together and become more than the sum of their parts? I don't think Lucien Favre has shown us thus far that that he's capable of doing that. So no. So out of the group winners, I would probably place them, you know, number 7 or number 8. Manchester City beat Marseille 3-0 as Aguero comes off the bench to score. Robbo, it's his first goal from open play since March. How important is this?
Massively important. Aguero is a far better player than Jesus. And if he can stay fit from now to the end of the season, Man City have got a chance of climbing that Premier League and winning the Champions League. Chelsea and Krasnodar draw 1-0 in a meaningless game. And Billy Gilmour makes his first start of the season. Gab, Frank Lampard really likes him, doesn't he?
He's only started 2 league games thus far, but every indication is that, you know, they have big plans for this kid. 19 years old, a little bit in the Jorginho mold, a little bit in the Kovacic mold. He's an extra body in the middle of the park, and, you know, that never hurts. Liverpool already guaranteed first place, draw 1-1 with Midtjylland. Sorry, I tried to get that right. Robbo, during this injury hit run, we've seen Klopp give space to a bunch of youngsters, Cuiv Kelleher, Rhys Williams, now Leighton Clarkson, and Billy Kometio. Any of these guys stand out for you?
Well, I'm going to say Kelleher, the goalkeeper, because I think he's looked very calm. When a young goalkeeper comes into the side, you look at, are they calm? Are they nervous? Do they make the right decisions? His decision-making has been excellent, both with his saves and with the ball at his feet. And that's the hardest thing for goalkeepers. Now, he made one mistake when to come out and when not to, but I think he's been excellent, and I'm sure he'll go on, and I'm not sure we're going to see too much of him in the next few weeks once everybody's fit, but over the next course of the next few years, we're going to see a lot of that goalkeeper.
I'd expect we'll probably see some Reece Williams as well if they don't sign another centre-back in January.
Bayern qualified ages ago, so unsurprisingly, Hansi Flick mixed up it all up against Lokomotiv Moscow. 2-0 the score. Gab, they looked untouchable in this group stage. Are they favourites to repeat their Champions League win?
I don't know that they're my favourites. By the way, we have to give a shout-out to Eric-Maxime Choupo-Moutang, who scored. They're certainly very deep. I think some of the issues still remain in the sense that it's a long season for them. They've been stretched. They've had injuries. I don't think the reserves have been able to step up as effectively as Hansi Flick.
In the front areas, midfield or at the back?
I think mostly in midfield and at the back. I mean, look at Bouna Sarr, the issues he's had. Nobody's really, really standing out across Europe, so heck, why not Bayern? Robbo Pires says he doesn't understand why the club don't rely more on former players. Robbo, it sort of confused me since, unless I'm mistaken, Steve Bould, Per Mertesacker, Edu, and of course Mikel Arteta are all former Gooners. And you're a former Gooner yourself.
Yeah.
Now, does Pires actually mean that they're not relying specifically on former players named Robbo Pires?
I think that's probably because they had Lundberg as well for a little while, didn't they, as their caretaker. The most successful manager they've had in recent times was Arsene Wenger. I don't think he played for Arsenal, so maybe they're going the wrong route at the moment. Gab, a sad day as Paolo Rossi passed away last night, aged 64. Your memories of him?
Well, look, I mean, we all, I think most football fans around the world, right, we're all defined by the first World Cup that we remember. And for me, the first World Cup that I remember was 1982, which is pretty good if you happen to be Italian like I am, because it worked out pretty well. Rossi was obviously at the center of that hat trick against Brazil, that epic game against what I think was the greatest World Cup team to never win a World Cup, at least in my lifetime. Yeah. That was absolutely epic. I got to meet him afterwards. He was always a very laid back, never took himself too seriously, and just a very kind of gentle guy. You know, I don't want to use the term lightweight in a negative sense, but that's kind of how it felt. When
was he expected to do so well in that World Cup?
No. He was coming off 2 years where he didn't play. He was embroiled in a betting scandal before that. And it was a really, really big deal that, you know, Enzo Berizzotti, the Italy manager at the time, took him back. It was a classic sort of redemption story for him. Never quite made the grade at club level after that World Cup, although they did bring him back for the 86 World Cup, but still, he was tremendous, tremendous striker, tremendous figure, I think. And also, 1978, you might remember this too. He had a big World Cup there, scoring, I think, three goals for Italy as they came third in the tournament. Yeah, or fourth, actually, I think.
They lost to Brazil in the third world playoff.
Right, that's all we've got time for today. Well, I was going to say, you won't be back on Monday,
but
it'll be Jules. So tune in then. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate is to not search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.